15. So the additional language, the additional language is that third bullet.
You know, all of us are not here.
I do, but enough of us are here to vote on this.
Oh, okay. I see what you're doing.
You ready for motion?
Yes.
I would like to move that the commission accepts DPLE recommendation with the three bullets as shown on the slide.
Second.
Okay, we have motion second. Any discussion? Please vote.
So if I vote against this, it won't pass.
That's true. Under duress, the motion passes
One abstain.
4-0 with Woods, Norby absent. Commissioner Day, what was your vote on that?
It is abstain.
Okay, 4-2-1. Sorry. Commissioner Day abstaining.
It'd be 4-2-1. Two would be opposed.
That's what I said, 4-2-1.
Two absent.
4-0-1.
Absent.
4-0-0.
4-0-1 with two commissioners absent. We got it.
Thank you.
You got it, but somebody listening to the tape might not get it.
Okay, you'd think I just showed up.
And this is your third time being chair?
Okay, we've got Williamson Act presentation. This is item number L.
Thank you, Chairman Beck. The Williamson Act is a state law that provides the foundation for agricultural preserves and contracts. We describe the basics of the act and preserves and contracts in a fact sheet in our report. Agricultural contracts provide reduced property taxes as an incentive for restricting one's property to an agricultural or open space use. In order for a property to be eligible for an agricultural contract, it must be within an agricultural preserve. While there are common goals between the general plan update and Williamson Act with preserving agricultural lands, neither rely upon the other, and they are largely independent. However, the general plan update implementation plan does include an implementation action to review lands within agricultural preserves and remove them where appropriate. This action is addressed by the general plan update draft environmental impact report, but would be a separate project undertaken at a later date. Therefore, with regards to the Williamson Act lands, we recommend that the planning commission support the general plan update implementation action related to agricultural preserves. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman.
We have a question.
And this, I should have explained earlier my abstention, since I don't normally abstain. But I understood today in this schedule, a lot of these were really just kind of referrals from us to staff to come back with information and to kind of get a report, and to not necessarily give any further direction, because staff's already on the track to doing what they need to do. So that's kind of what I abstained on the last two, because I don't understand why we need to provide any further direction to staff unless there's some change in policy. So this is kind of the same one. I don't know. I don't really, I'm not sure. I don't remember. Maybe I brought this up. I don't remember. But I don't know what further, I mean, a motion to continue to do what you're doing just seems kind of redundant.
No, we previously did not act because it was that situation. I don't think these are all the same category of they need action or they don't. Some of them do. And those ones that do are based on questions or suggestions that the commissioners made. So they resulted in a change or some kind of more specific direction, and I think so far that's how we've been doing it. You're right, this one particularly, it just, it doesn't have any action associated with it as far as I can see. Is that correct?
That is correct. We're simply recommending that we continue processing as Commissioner Day expressed.
Okay, so this is an information item for all intents and purposes, unless somebody changes commission's mind. David Shibley, Duncan McFedrich, Carl Meyer. Any order?
Duncan had to leave. I saw him going out the door. Dave Shibley, here on behalf of the Solve organization. I'm not quite sure what staff is recommending, but my recommendation is we keep the Williamson Act as much as possible. You've already talking about adopting the PACE program, which is purchase and development rights. If you do adopt a TDR program with an equity program, this to me is an opportunity to preserve large agricultural areas for generations. Because if folks farmer-made farm for two or three generations. He gets tired. He sold off his density, has one or two units. And with the Williamson Act, his rates are cheap. He can very cheaply lease the land to someone else who just wants to farm, and it'll stay in agriculture. And I think that's what we're trying to do forever. So I'm very much in favor of trying to keep the Williamson Act intact where it's appropriate. Thank you.
Okay, thanks. I do have a clarification, and then staff. When you say disestablishment of preserves were appropriate, they can only be disestablished by the property owner who established the preserve status in the first place, correct?
Chairman Beck, actually, the county does have the authority to disestablish preserves. If we did go and implement this project, we would be coordinating with the property owners and determining which property owners wished to disestablish their preserves.
Oh,
and
this is a much bigger deal.
The concept here is that we have hundreds of thousands of acres in agriculture preserves, but only a small portion of that are actually under contract. And what's happened is as those property owners wish to realize the densities that are on their lands and subdivide, they have to come forward at each individually and propose those disestablishments. And we wanted to provide a process where we could, on a larger scale, look at all of the ag preserves and get a better picture of which areas are appropriate for us to maintain agriculture preserves and which areas is it more appropriate for us to use our land use map that we're developing through the general plan update as the primary source of directing where development will occur.
Okay, that makes sense. But you did draw a distinction between those under contract and those not under contract. So the rules applying to those under contract remain, correct?
That is correct. In order for us to remove a contract, that's a much more complicated process.
It's a 10-year process.
It's a 10-year process unless there's a cancellation, which my understanding is only a property owner can request a cancellation, and there's substantial fees involved with that.
Right, because there was tax benefits accruing and all that. Okay. And so I guess I'm a little confused at how I thought Williamson Act based preserve was established at the point that somebody went under contract, but apparently there's a pre-designation?
That is correct. The County of San Diego undertook an effort to pre-plan potential contract lands, and that was done a couple decades ago, and they went through a couple of cycles of that, and the result was that there are numerous lands in the unincorporated county that have the preserve, but the property owners never chose to enter under a contract, and in fact, there's a lot of lands where the lands ended up being not suitable for agriculture, and we never anticipate that they will be suitable for contract.
Okay. Unless there's no other questions, we can move on. That's not an action item per se, so we'll go to item number M, and this is alternative septic systems, everybody's favorite topic. Dan Nierneck from Homol, Matt Adams again, and Lee Vance.
Chairman Beck, would you like a staff report?
Oh, I'm sorry, please.
It's very brief. The next item relates to alternative wastewater systems, which are supported in draft policy LU 14.5 in the land use element, as you can see here. If you recall, we did discuss alternative wastewater systems under the Conservation Subdivision Program topic, and no further guidance is necessary at this time. The Planning Commission at that time supported staff's policy on alternative wastewater systems.
Okay.
Question of staff?
Yes.
The language, as I read it, gives preference to conventional systems. So what you're saying in that paragraph, by saying that, you know, alternative will be used if or when conventional systems are not feasible or in conformance with state guidelines, you're basically, that paragraph assumes a position that the alternative wastewater systems are less than desirable or inferior to the conventional systems. Is that...
Commissioner Norby, through the chair, yes, I believe that's an appropriate interpretation, and the information that we've gotten from our DEH counterparts as well as the state is that the alternative wastewater systems require a greater amount of monitoring and a greater amount of maintenance by the property owner, and so they're more prone to failure and more prone to problems, and that's why the conventional systems are preferred over the alternative systems.
Thank you.
Actually, that brings up a question that I raised at the Orchard Run thing. Did staff figure out whether Woods Valley Ranch package treatment plant was approved with the notion that it would be potentially expanded to accommodate Orchard Run or some other project?
Mr. Chairman, we have not finished our analysis of that yet.
All right. Okay.
If I may, and I would like to just clarify this, and I think that this may be one of the reasons why this continues to be an issue, is there's a difference between an alternative wastewater system or alternative septic system and a package treatment plant that serves multiple lots. Yeah. That would be a community system, and that has fully different regulations than an alternative wastewater system for single-family residents.
Of course. Thanks for clarifying that. Okay. We'll have the speakers. We won't.
Just a point of information, gray water systems, are they in the mix at all in any way?
Gray water systems, Commissioner Woods, through the chair, gray water systems are not specifically addressed under this policy. They're a different issue. There have been some recent changes in state law that allow for or promote gray water systems. DEH regulates those, and we have specific regulations within DEH that relate to gray water systems, and they're working on looking at those and determining how best to regulate them. But that's a separate matter from the general plan update. We haven't gotten into the details of gray water systems.
That will be coming in the future.
If it's a modification to DEH policy, that would not be within the purview of the Planning Commission. But if there's a modification to one of the Department of Planning and Land Use policies or documents, then we would definitely bring it in front of you.
Okay. I just as a FYI, I'd like to, if there is such an opportunity, please bring it before so we can weigh in.
Okay, Dan Nirnix, Matt Adams, Lee Vance.
Dan Nerinx, Hamul Dulzer Planning Group, and this time I will not make the mistake I did before, Commissioner Beck, Chairman, and other commissioners. I'm representing the Hamul Dulzer Planning Group. The concern we have here is not that the systems, alternative systems, are bad or anything. As the staff has mentioned, they do have some drawbacks on the maintenance and the like. We're concerned that in regards to clustered or environmental subdivisions, that for some way they would be mandated to have them in those systems, and that's just not, I don't think it's acceptable to our planning group, that we have to have a package treatment plant type of a situation. And so that's our only concern on this.
Okay, maybe staff can respond to that.
Mr. Chairman, on that point,
okay.
As I agree, I think there is some confusion. When I hear alternative wastewater systems, it has nothing to do with package treatment plants. My recollection, and I was going to, maybe one of the speakers can rebut what I thought staff said, but this has to do with other septic-type systems for individual homes, like the mound system or other systems that are used in other states. So this is not about, I don't understand, staff can correct me, this is not in the context of conservation subdivisions or major or even minor subdivisions. This is more about smaller individual lot splits and the size of the parcel that's available. And the traditional septic system, you know, whether it's an acre, or, you know, there's new technology available that could be explored. So am I wrong on that?
Commissioner Day, through the chair, there is a belief and with some individuals that the alternative on-site sewage disposal systems will allow for reduced lot sizes. We have been told by DEH that they do not believe that that's the case, but I continue to hear the argument, and we have not explored that thoroughly to determine whether or not that's true. And I think that part of this really relies upon these types of facilities being approved by the state and being allowed to be implemented, and then we can see how they're actually functioning and get a better sense of, are we going to be able to accommodate smaller lot sizes with them? But I think responding to what you're saying, I think that's largely separate than the conservation subdivisions. For a lot of the smaller lot sizes that we would want to be achieving with those projects, they would require something different, like a package treatment plant or sewer.
Okay, Matt Adams, Lee Vance.
No, it's your Michael.
Matthew Adams, San Diego BIA. This gets to my overall theme today, is making sure that the policies and guidelines that are being established match the objectives of the success of your general plan. And there are flaws in this particular area, because you are putting essentially thousands of units in areas such as a Fallbrook, Ramona, Lakeside, and yet we are hearing that that there's no ability to service through sewer all of these units that are being allocated to those regions, and they don't have the capacity, and they don't and they're not inclined to build more. You're looking at the Rainbow Water District on Bonzel. They've both said that they don't have the ability to service these units that are being projected, and they don't see how they're going to increase their capacity. You've got Ramona pretty much said in their response, environmental documents, they don't have it either. So it really makes it important that these alternative systems are allowed to move forward. And yet I hear chatter in the county that while they may be willing to see these things come online, or they're going to be able to maintain them, they don't know if they're going to be able to work on that. So it's really important that the maintenance and operation of these facilities be established. So you can do them, and the county's going to fulfill their obligations in terms of being able to maintain these things. And there's ways to finance that, through various methods. But if the county is intending to push all these units out into those areas, but not provide specific detail and guidelines as to how you're going to be able to produce these alternative septic systems, then these units aren't going to be built. So we want to hear from the association some clear directive either from here or clear responses from staff on, are these things going to be allowed to be built? How are they going to be maintained? How are they going to be financed to be maintained? Because with smaller products coming online, which is what I was trying to say in my inappropriate comments earlier this morning, you're not going to have the big units anymore. You can't look at the past to see where the future is. It's going to be smaller projects, smaller economy of scale, which means it's going to be more expensive to get things done because you don't have the units to absorb those additional costs. So we really have to get our arms around this ability to provide these alternative septic systems. Are they going to be maintained? And more importantly, are they going to be financed?
Are you suggesting that the cost be borne by the county or the public?
For maintenance, sure.
Well, that's...
Well, if you're not going to allow, if water districts aren't going to allow,
that's what I thought I heard you say.
Extensions of their systems, and then this is the only way you're going to get it done. Sure, we provide them, but there are ways to finance these things, and those are the areas that have to be identified and explored.
I don't think we should. I'm not proposing that we have a debate about this topic.
No, I'm just saying.
But the premise that the public is going to pay for the sewer treatment for a subdivision is quite a big leap, but I guess we'll just have to see. And in terms of these things being permitted in the future, I mean, I can only think of one case where it was a real major debate on a land use project. I mean, almost, because there was some policy in place that precluded it. But generally speaking, those things are approved with the findings that they're necessary right now. Okay.
I have one question of the speaker. Yeah. First of all, your prior remarks were very appropriate, not inappropriate. The policy language that's before us, do you have any issues with that policy language or additions, or do you support that? Essentially, the draft policy is supporting the use of alternative.
Well, you're challenging me without my glasses, but it's to support the use of alternative on-site disposal systems. Yes, but we have to ensure that the discussion on how are they going to be funded and how they're going to be maintained is addressed.
Great, thank you.
Are we talking about two different things here? We're talking about package treatment plants, which I think Mr. Adams is speaking to, on larger projects, 20 or more units. And this is smaller projects, 10 or less type units.
The so same thing, I guess. Are we...
It's not the same thing, or it is the same thing?
It is not the same thing. What we're talking about here are alternative on-site sewage disposal
systems. For individual
systems,
residences.
And usually they're done in lieu of a conventional septic system. Mm. Mound system, something like that, is what we're talking about.
Okay, so policy. I understand
I don't know. It did seem to me that the speaker was referring to things that we usually talk about with regard to package treatment plants and such. So,
and how does that work? And can you refresh my mind where we are on that? I heard the chairman say that it's done as a matter of course, but and I think the board policy changed on that too, right?
No. Commissioner Pallinger, through the chair, we are not proposing changes concurrently with the general plan update to board policy that relates to package treatment plants. However, we have identified that as an area that needs further consideration as part of implementation of the general plan. And we do intend to look at all of our policies that relate to package treatment plants and sewers after the general plan update's adopted and determine whether changes are necessary, and we'll be bringing those back before the Planning Commission and the board for consideration.
Mr. Wood, can you just refer to me what that is? Is that I-68?
Yes, that's correct. Board policy I-78 is the primary one, but then there's several others.
It precludes package treatment plants that are seen as growth-inducing. Is that, in a nutshell, what that is?
Commissioner Pallinger, through the chair, if I recall, it doesn't relate to growth-inducing. That's with regards to some of our sewer extension policies. But with regards to the package treatment plant, which is I-78, I believe that it relates to where they can occur and where they cannot. And I'm not positive if it's that policy or another one that requires that they be publicly maintained. But we retain that policy within our general plan update.
So, Mr. Adams, are we addressing the issue that you are bringing forward?
The I-78 policy, yes. And you see, they're saying, okay, we'll address these after we get the general plan up. We're
going to
address, and this is a core issue for us, because the ability to provide the units that you're saying can go in these areas that the water districts say they can't supply.
Correct.
Right?
That's right. Yeah, absolutely.
The only way you can do it is to allow this stuff under I-78, figure out either through a county maintenance assessment district or something how to maintain and manage them. If that isn't done in a timely fashion, then your general plan is meaningless because you can't build the units that you're saying you want built to begin with. Okay.
So this seems to be a rather significant issue here.
It's also actually not the agenda item.
And it's not the agenda item. So, and I don't want to pull this, but I think it's something that we need to discuss at some point. How do we address this issue?
Okay. Those are all the speakers on item M.
Lee Vance.
Oh, no, I'm sorry. Lee Vance.
So, sorry. Lee Vance, offices at 224 Seaman Drive. I was basically prepared to make many of the same points that Mr. Adams just made, but I won't, because he already made them. The only difference I would point out is this, that board policy I-78 needs to be looked at and needs to be continued. Package treatment plants are many places going to be necessary because existing sewer districts cannot provide, can't meet your target goals for development in many areas of the county. You're going to need package treatment plants. I think wherever you put a package treatment plant in, that it ought to be managed by the wastewater treatment section of the Department of Public Works, but may be operated by an outside outfit like Dudick or others who are licensed by the state of California to do that. And that would be my recommendation, some policy that deals with that. Thank you very much. Appreciate your time.
Thank you. Okay, no action item. No action necessary on this item. Is there any? If there is no further discussion, we'll go on. Yes, there is. Yes.
Just generally speaking, staff, is that a last alternative for a development to put in a package treatment plant? When the project doesn't perk and the whole nine yards and we're not close to the sewer?
Yes.
I mean, are we supporting those philosophically or are we really trying to avoid them?
If you look at current county policy, I would argue that basically it discourages that.
That's kind of what I thought. And I'm just wondering, is there going to be a change in that focus? Because there a lot of these sewer districts are not and cannot afford to expand.
We've heard a lot about that. Providing water and sewer service to a number of the areas that we're projecting growth is going to be a challenge. And we have heard from a number of sewer and water districts of that challenge. One of the key parts of implementation of this plan will be working with them to try and come up with options as to how this can work. Matter of fact, we're presently working with the Ramona District on sewer issues globally and trying to find solutions there. So I don't think, you know, we should just write them off as
being... Kind of where I wanted to go. I just wanted to hear where the if there was, if we're kind of edging towards a new position because of some of these challenges.
Right. And certainly as we go through our implementation and look at our sewer policies, there may be areas where we're projecting growth and where we just come to an agreement that, you know, that package treatment plants may be the only way to let those come to fruition.
Okay. That's all I wanted. Thank you.
Okay. There's no action necessary on this item. If everybody's okay, we'll go ahead and move on to item number N, tracking the general plan implementation.
Yes, thank you, Chairman Beck. We've generally described this in a fact sheet in the staff report. However, there are numerous details to be worked out. Implementation on the general plan update will be monitored and reported on an annual basis. This reporting is required by state law, and our commitment to providing enhanced monitoring is reflected in the implementation plan, which we're bringing forward with the general plan update. This issue is not time sensitive, though, and can be addressed at a later date. Therefore, our recommendation is that the Planning Commission direct staff to return with this issue prior to our first annual report with the general plan update so we can discuss the specifics that will go into our annual reporting.
Prior to when? I missed that part.
Prior to our first annual report on the general plan update.
Okay. Is that the end of the staff report?
Yes, those are our comments.
Okay. Dave Sibley. Chibley, excuse me.
Devin's got a slide to put up there for me, but I'll pretty much, Dave Chibley, Escondido, I'll pretty much go by memory. I'm just asking, when we do the general plan implementation, we make yearly reports to the Board of Supervisors, that what we do is indicate how many units we're going to do by build out, how many units currently exist, how many units are entitled during the year, and do that community by community. I also ask that we account for the lost units that we lose. I call them, they go to density heaven, those that are lost by the purchases we make for environmental things. I call it density heaven. I want to make sure in that report that that goes out to each of the 26 sponsor groups so they can gauge. What we've done with this process for the last 12 years is we've engaged a lot of community groups that haven't been that actively engaged. I'd like to find some way to continue that. I'd like to also suggest we implement what's in the current general plan, which is every 5 years you're supposed to update each community plan. In theory, if you did that, we wouldn't be revising this general plan now because you tend to remain current. So what I'm suggesting is, and that's the five areas, A, B, C, D, E, F, but I've sent you emails, you'll see it, so there's no sense in me covering that, is every 5 years that we go ahead and update. If we've got 26 sponsor groups, 5 years after we complete the one-year implementation after the general plan, you say, hey, units 1 through 5 are going to take a year. We're going to look at your general plan again, see if we have any hot spots or any issues. The following year, in the 6 years after implementation, you take another 5. Your general plan tends to stay current. You've got your people actually involved. And I want to couple all this based on some flexibility in the general plan. I think you need to revisit. And you're talking about there be no general plan amendments unless, if you can't do it, if there's a change in regional categories. I don't know if the supervisors can overrule that or not. If you put it in your general plan, you need some more flexibility. I'm looking at the fact that I'd like to tie this kind of, if you do adopt a TDR, an equity program, to give you more flexibility where we can govern more with a carrot than a stick, where you can reshape some of the landscape and preserve these large environmental areas by shaping particular areas in the East County, as SOAR has suggested. What I worry about without the flexibility is I just relocated one plant from Quebec for a client, or out of Canada, 740,000 square feet to Indiana under the new guidelines, which says it's got to be made in America. I think you can get that pressure on the border down here with Mexico, and that's going to affect some of your communities out there. You got a big increase in population. I think you need some flexibility in your general plan. If you do these yearly updates, you make a report, and you revise your community plans every 5 years, you're being made aware of it, and you can make adjustments, and hopefully the TDR plan would give you some flexibility to do that other than just governing with a stick all the time. Thank you.
Okay, the action in front of the commission again, could you put that up there, please? That's the end of the speakers. It's just a return with the implementation plan prior to the first annual report. Motion?
So moved.
Second?
Second.
Okay, we have Reese and Woods. Motion and second. Any further discussion? If not, please vote. Passes unanimously. We're moving on to the next item, which is a comparison of rural lands 20. There are no speaker slips on this, so we'll take the staff report.
Thank you, Chairman Beck. Our last topic relates to the Rural Lands 20 designation. We are asked to report on how the tentative recommendation relates to the rural lands designations that were on the referral map. As background, there is 22,321 acres of difference between the Rural Lands 20 and the Rural Lands 40 designations on the two maps that were endorsed by the board, the draft land use map and the referral map. These areas actually began as Rural Lands 40 on the draft land use map and then were changed to Rural Lands 20 on the referral map at the board's direction. In developing our preliminary recommendation to the Planning Commission, staff carefully reviewed the differences between these two maps and the other alternatives that we reviewed in the environmental impact report. We also looked at site specifics and the resulting environmental impacts. As a result, the Planning Commission tentative recommendation, which is based on that analysis, contains 6,356 more acres of rural lands 20 than on the draft map, but 15,965 acres less than the referral map. And we also provided a map that shows where the rural lands 20 designations occur on the referral map, and those are both the grayed areas here and the yellow areas, and the yellow areas reflect those that are rural lands 40 on the PC map. And as a reminder, this mapping was addressed in detail in our previous hearings, and therefore our recommendation is that the Planning Commission reaffirm its tentative recommendations on the land use maps.
Okay, no action necessary, really. So is there any further discussion?
Do we have speakers?
Nope.
Yeah, I have questions.
I believe this was one of those categories that I call it a referral from, and I think I was the author of this one. So I was trying to go through the minutes, and I can't quite find it right now. But what I was thinking at the time, and if you can go back to that slide with the number of acres on there, what I wanted to see was an analysis of the multiple rural use. I think that's what our existing category is called, the slope-dependent 2, 4, and 8. Is that, I mean, you can correct me along the way here, but I want to make sure I'm getting the terminology correct.
It's 4, 8, 20.
Okay, 4, 8, 20. And to look at all the parcels with that current designation, and then to compare that to what staff is recommending with the new RL20, the new RL40, the 80, and the 160. And to then just get a real quick matrix of what the number of acres are that we're talking about for current designations as compared to what staff is proposing. So I'm not sure if we have some of that in here or not, but that's, and it didn't require any action, but it was a data point that I wanted to get back from staff.
Commissioner Day, through the chair, what we can do is run that analysis, and we can send that out to the commissioners after this hearing. It'll probably take us maybe a week and a half to run that.
That'd be great.
Okay, that sounds good. No action necessary at this point, so we'll move on to the next item, which is update on other items. I'm not sure what that means.
Chairman Beck, we did want to provide a brief update on where we stand with regards to equity mechanisms and also the community plans and with regards to their lot size. Would you mind bringing up the community plans? Just quickly, with regards to the equity mechanisms, we have been undertaking a lot of research related to transfer development right programs and PDR programs. We are going to be meeting with Commissioners Norby and Day to have some further discussions about them, and we are also going to be meeting with several of our stakeholders to obtain more of their input on this issue. Our plan is that at the April 16th hearing that we will have in front of you essentially a menu of the different options that can go into creating a TDR program or a PDR program, and then a couple of concepts of selecting those options and implementing and what that would be. And we are going to, within one of those concepts, try to reflect the recommendations that have been coming up from our certain stakeholders, like the Save Our Rural Economy has a concept that they've been suggesting, and we'll try to reflect that in one of our concepts and let you know what the implications might be of supporting a concept like that. And then we'll try to come up with a couple of other concepts for consideration. But we just wanted to make sure that you were aware that we were continuing to work on that, and we're planning on returning on 16th with that information.
Okay, that sounds good. Okay, we'll go ahead and move on to the last item for today. It's
Chairman Beck, we did have one more item we wanted to report on. Sorry.
Sure.
If you don't mind.
My apologies. Go ahead.
Thank you. Do you want to run through this real quick?
Sure. Good afternoon, commissioners. What we have is a series of three slides that were an update to the standards that the different community groups have placed in their community plans. It's expanded upon the other slides that we presented at the subcommittee hearing to include all of the groups, even if they don't have any specific standards. So this is the backcountry community groups. As you notice, the Cuyamaca, Descanso, Campo Lake Morena, Jacumba, and Tecate groups have no specific community standards in their community plans, as well as the Boulevard and Potrero groups. While we have staff recommended standards, we do still have disagreement with the community group. This is the North County. So the Bonzo community, there is still a disagreement with the Bonzo community sponsor group, whereas the Twin Oaks, Hidden Meadows, Paula, and Rainbow groups have no specific standards. And finally, we have the East County group, which I don't know if Dan is still here from Humul, but I believe there might be some disagreement with the Humul planning group still, as well as no specific standards in Lakeside, Otay, and Spring Valley.
And again, this is an issue that we'll be bringing back on the 16th as part of our community plans. And that's when we're asking the Planning Commission to support the general plan update as a whole, which includes the policy document, the community plans, the implementation plan, the conservation subdivision program, and the EIR, which we will have available prior to that hearing.
Okay. Commissioner Woods?
I just had a question on SR2. On the East County minimum reduction lot size. You've got one on there for like three or four of the communities. I thought that was going to go to 0.5 on the SR2 as a minimum standard.
I think that there was a desire expressed by EHL and perhaps some others that go down to 0.5. We were
right.
using
That was my recollection, and I kind of agreed with that. But, I mean, how are you going to have a conservation subdivision? How does that affect that?
Well, Commissioner Woods, through the chair, the SR2 in many cases is further, out from our village cores than even the SR1 area, and extending sewer out to the SR2 areas is often a lot more improbable than actually getting it to the SR1 areas.
That's why we need alternative wastewater systems. We got to revisit policy 78. We've got to revisit 78.
Seems like
it's hand in glove.
Seems like we're not, just seems rather conservative.
Noted. The other issue that we used in identifying what our general target was for these areas, when you're in the SR 1, 2, and 4 areas, primarily we were looking at preserving 50% of the lot in open space. Which is generally a planned residential development requires 40%. So we were using that as a gauge, and that's also where our framework was for, at least getting to the one. Of course, it's always desirable to be able to go lower than
one. You
have
a problem with SR4 going to two instead of one. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I had a different vision of how this would play out, I guess. I thought we would be more persuasive towards the advantages of the conservation subdivision. By having those numbers in there, it seems like we're kind of backing off a little bit.
Commissioner Woods, to the chair, these numbers have not changed substantially from our workshop on the conservation subdivision program. The two was in there before and for the SR4, and a lot of these acreages, we've worked extensively with the community groups to come up with them. So I understand where you're going with it, but I think it would also be a pretty big change to a lot of the communities that we spend a lot of time with to go out and mandate that they go substantially lower than that.
Okay.
All right. Anything else on this item? staff? These are your two points. I'll stop interrupting you
and wait for your lead. We are finished with our updates. Thank you.
Okay. Is there any discussion on this? Okay. Now we'll get to our last item. Maybe I was looking ahead here. Public testimony, and we have four. We had five speakers. We now have four speakers on, all from Ramona, I believe. Excuse me. Joe Minervini, if I'm pronouncing that.
Yes, Minervini, thank you.
Minervini, pretty good. Reed Myers, Donna Myers, Randy Lene, and somebody who left but gave some material to us, and I don't have a slip anymore. This can go
down. Weather's beautiful, so I'll be quick. My name is Joe Minervini. I live at 3430 Cecilia, Joe, and Ramona. I'm retired. I would like to alert you to one of the road projects in your general plan that will adversely affect many people in Ramona. Thanks to some members on our local community planning group, this road project is part of an old, ill-conceived plan to reroute through traffic off of Ramona's Main Street onto what is known as the Ramona Southerly Bypass. Please look at page 3A on the handout. You see the bypass, you see where Main Street is. This route proposes to take the through traffic on 67 off of 67 and route it through quiet ranch lands, pastures, farms, and residential neighborhoods in Ramona. My backyard is one of them. As you know, Highway 67 through Ramona is also known as Main Street. Years ago, some of the local Ramona planning group thought there was too much congestion on Main Street in downtown Ramona. So now the Southerly Bypass is on the general plan. Is there any Main Street in any town in rural America that you know of that does not have congestion on Main Street? I feel like I'm trying to stop a long freight train with my foot on the tracks. I don't know if it's going to work. I ask you to please look at your road plan for Ramona and review what is known as the Southerly Bypass. Most of the residents don't even know about this Southerly Bypass. Every one of the merchants on Main Street I've talked to thinks this bypass idea is crazy. We have enough vacant stores on Main Street in Ramona. We don't need any more. Please revisit these four separate road projects. Look at the pages 4A, 4B, 4C, and 4D in front of you. Please take them off the general plan until we have more time to get more folks in Ramona educated about what's going on. 95% of the people in Ramona don't know much about what goes on at the planning group level, meaning our local planning group. Nobody wants to route traffic away from businesses on Main Street. Business is tough enough nowadays. One of these four projects is shovel ready. We'll be shovel ready in about 2 years. Take note of page 4C. This project will cost over $7 million and will not serve any substantial purpose. This new road on page 4C will not carry any more traffic. It's going to carry maybe more bicycles, but not more cars, than the existing road. The new road will be more dangerous than the existing road, especially to bicycle riders. Instead of the old road, which goes straight, this is going to make S-turns. And can you imagine riding on the side of the road in a bicycle lane, which I'm sure will be the regular width, and I wouldn't want to be in that curve. I hope I planted a seed on this long freight train called the general plan. We need your cooperation on these four projects. Please, I realize that our planning group needs to be addressed. So far, most of them won't listen to us. Give us more time, please. Thank you.
Thank you. Those folks I called, just come on up in any order. Reed Myers, Donna Myers, Randy Lene. Oh, that's Lennox? Okay, I'm sorry.
Hello, my name is Reed Myers, 1819 Warnock Drive. I don't have anything really rehearsed for you people, but on Joe's note, that's a 90-foot wide road that's going to go through two of the last five dairies in our county, through wetlands, 100-year floodplains, multi-million dollar project, 90 feet wide, and it's going to head back to two lanes on 67, two lanes on South 67. It's kind of ridiculous. And the other is called the Ramona Street Expansion. They're up to, I think it's $5 million to put a third of a mile of road. There's an aqueduct that needs to be moved. I mean, all sorts of hoopla that this Ramona planning group is just not seeing. There's no bang for your buck there. I'm in the contractor, in the trades, and if there was private funding on something like this, it would have got washed a long time ago. And somehow the Ramona Planning Board thinks that San Diego has very deep pockets in this economy. And fix the stoplights. Fix the traffic lights. You know, don't spend millions of dollars on a road that won't work. There's nothing wrong with the roads except the people that drive it. I mean, that's pretty much all I have to say. Is just keep your eye on what's going on.
Okay, thank you. Sure.
I'm going to defer to the other Ramona speaker.
Go ahead. Anybody in Orange, just if your name's been called and you're closer, you win.
Good afternoon, Chairman Beck, Commissioners. My name is Randy Lennick. I'm a rancher from Campo. I'm the president of Save Our Rural Economy, 2627 Cameron Truck Trail, Campo, California. I have a short letter I'd like to read into the record, and I've delivered a copy. Dear Chairman Beck and Commissioners, SOAR applauds the recognition by the Commissioners of the inequity arising from the severe downzoning of the rural lands as currently proposed in the general plan update. SOAR particularly applauds the courageous comments made by commissioners at the February 19th hearing suggesting that the density equity issue be resolved prior to implementing the general plan update. We continue to contend that the currently proposed dramatic density downzoning provisions are unfair and contain serious economic consequences for property owners, rural communities, and the taxpayers, but remain ready and available to assist in bringing forward a balanced and fair resolution to this serious problem. SOAR recognizes that such a resolution will necessarily require time beyond the currently targeted arbitrary fall of 2010 deadline, and requests that the Planning Commission recommend to the Board of Supervisors extend the time allotted to staff and direct them to develop an alternative that restores a reasonable amount of density to the rural lands, which can be analyzed and vetted as an additional option with the other land maps. We would note that the current lingering economic recession has provided a window of opportunity for the county and all involved to step back and get this plan right. The components are there to develop an alternative that balances economic interests and the environment. Please remain committed to the option to adoption of a general plan that works for all the citizens of San Diego County.
Thank you. Donna?
Mass.
Yes?
Yes. Randy?
Yes.
Yeah. You were before us the last time we were assembled here, were you not?
I was.
And you presented a huge package.
Yes, I did.
Okay, and I have to refer back to that. And staff made a statement that you guys have been meeting with him. Are you going to meet with, not him, but the group? Have you met with them yet?
Commissioner Brooks, through the chair, yes, we did. We met, I think it was about 2 weeks ago. We met, we've also exchanged some emails, and we're planning on meeting again within the next couple of weeks. So
oh,
we're,
okay.
We've
That's
been
what...
very communicating a lot.
And I would like to add, Commissioner Brooks, that we do very much look forward to working with staff. There has been an open dialogue on this issue.
There has been an open
There has, okay. yes.
Because I recall I read some of the information you gave us before, and I apologize. I didn't get all the way through it, but it was very thought-provoking. And I hope that you did share with them, and maybe as a result, we might be able to institute some of it if you see fit.
And keep in mind that we've already had a summary response from staff on this item. So we've already kind of reviewed it and responded to it.
Just very quickly, okay. Chairman Beck, the other item I just wanted to mention real quickly was that one of the issues that has been listed in all of these things is the economic impacts of the plan, and we haven't talked about that at all.
Okay, Commissioner Woods.
Well, I just wanted to comment also to echo Commissioner Brooks' questions, that I think it's wise to evaluate what they put a lot of time and energy into. I, through Devin, have kind of kept pretty close tabs on what's going on this, and he shared with me some of the thoughts. And I don't agree with all of them, but a couple of them are credible, and hopefully they'll help create a mechanism that we can all live with a funding source.
Okay, is there anything else on this? I just seem to keep knocking people off, so I better back off a little. Is there some other comment to be made? If not, okay, Ms. Myers.
Good afternoon. My name is Donna Myers. I live at 1819 Warnock in Ramona. I live in the heart of the last working agricultural district in Ramona. I'm also a member of the American Farmland Trust. Their statistics state that our nation will continue to lose 2 million acres of forest, ranch, and open space land every year. 2 million acres destroyed every year. That's 5,400 acres every day, 200 acres disappearing every hour. This acreage is mostly productive land near small towns, cities, or suburbs that produce 3/4 of our fruits and vegetables and 2/3 of our dairy products. Without farm and ranch land, our nation loses its foundation to grow healthful food, to protect our water supply, and to sustain our environment. It's a simple fact. No farms and ranches, no food. No farms and forests and open spaces. No sustainable environment. Why am I beating this drum? Is it a good use of land to pave over farms and ranches? Is it a good use of land to destroy the last working agricultural belt in Ramona? This is the home of dairies, chicken ranches, cattle grazing, farms, fruit and nut orchards, vegetable crops, animal husbandry businesses, oat and barley fields, and an emerging world-class botanical garden. Yet our planning group supports two roads that will cost $13 million and destroy our valley. The question that our community raises is, have we identified the most important problems facing our community? Did we interrelate all of our concerns? What is the pending crisis? Our community is asking the governing bodies to practice due diligence, involve all the citizens in making decisions, and support our rural environment. It's really a matter of trust. When trust is disabused, isn't it akin to an act of betrayal? Ramona people feel betrayed. We're pushing back. We resist the assault on our rural environment. The cart is before the horse because decisions were made without involving us, the Ramona citizens. When the cart is put before the horse, no matter how many times you whip the animal, you won't go far. Sooner or later, you realize the direction needs to be changed, not necessarily the animal. I am here today to suggest a directional change more responsive to rural Ramona. I speak for the preservation of farm and ranch land. I speak for saving our environment. No new roads slicing our agricultural belt into ribbons.
Ms. Myers, could you summarize if you could, please?
Enough already. Mm-hmm. Preserve our rural environment. Thank you.
Very, very good testimony. Thank you very much.
Hey, I'd like to applaud you. You did wonderful.
You really did. You articulated your position better than I've heard in a long time.
Me. All right.
You're a Ramona man.
Yeah. Yeah, we know why he's.
Okay. That's the end of public testimony for today. I do want to raise, something that strikes me as a pretty significant implication, maybe the law of unintended consequences. Doing this bypass and the implications on the businesses in a community that the business community that was designed for road traffic in large measure. So it does seem like not an insignificant thing. I was imagining the same, and the issue came up when I was living in Julian, the same kind of, the local folks said we have congestion here, and so the implication was, well, let's get a bypass, and then the realization that the bypass, depending on where it is and what it does, is going to basically, siphon off all the business from the community around which it was built. So I just hope that issue has actually been looked at and reconciled, because I don't know that it has, especially when you look at the way this map works. It literally goes completely around the business community. It just bypasses the business community. So maybe somewhere in the mix that can be addressed. Okay, is there any other cleanup items that we have?
Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
Yeah, I had some questions on this issue.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
So I know we can't take action, but I just wanted to make sure I understood this in a little bit more detail. So can staff explain, is this in the circulation element currently? Is it in the existing circulation element? Is it in the proposed mobility element, whatever we're calling it now? I heard someone talk about funding, and I read through this, and it looks like, you know, certain segments are funded. So I just want to understand the bigger picture here.
Mr. Chairman, Commissioner Day, the big picture is the concept of a southern alignment has been around for a long time in Ramona and has been reflected in the circulation element. There are some changes that are being proposed to that alignment, and I would also say that Public Works has initiated actually construction of portions of the southern bypass and has actually initiated the EIR process to go through that. So this project has a substantial way to go before it actually is being constructed and ultimately would have to be approved by the Board of Supervisors. In terms of some detail, I'll ask Devin and his team to give some more detail on that.
Commissioner Day, through the chair. Right now, there's a DPW project, as Eric said, to extend Dye Road between Warnock Drive and up to extend Dye Road to Warnock Drive at San Vicente Road. The project includes a GPA and is consistent with the Ramona Roads Master Plan that was prepared in 2005. So this is the highest priority project for the Ramona Community Planning Group. Under the general plan update, we would downgrade the classification. Right now, it's a four-lane. On here, it's a four-lane classification, an existing general plan, Dye Road. We would downgrade it to a two-lane classification, but the general plan update also includes that realignment consistent with the GPA that is processing right now. And that's basically, you know, the questions I can answer.
Well, yeah, so if you can go back to the other photo, and I'm going to sneeze here. So existing circulation element for 20 years has had this southern alignment, and that looks like a straight extension of Dye Road. The other illustration you showed had a little.
Yes.
So which is it? And
that came from the Ramona Roads Master Plan done in 2005. Then when the general plan update became consistent with that, you know, took that recommendation from the Ramona Master Plan and made the alignment. Now the project, as it proceeds, is doing its own general plan amendment to be consistent with that.
And so what is the general plan update mobility element proposed for this? Any changes?
It proposes, this is what we're proposing right now. It would reduce the straight segment of Dye Road from a four-lane road in the current circulation element down to two lanes.
Okay.
So the road that's being built, is my understanding, is it is a two-lane road with shoulders. The shoulders would serve also for bike lane, so it would be no extra bike lane. It would just be a 40-foot wide road, including shoulder with its own bike lane, with the bike lane in the shoulder.
So one speaker spoke about 90 feet. What is that?
I'm not aware of that unless he's talking about an entire right-of-way that, you know, the entire road would have, including parkway, things like that. But the actual paved part of the road would be 40 feet, is my understanding.
And is there any money? I mean, I know that Public Works is doing the EIR. Is there construction funds already established or appropriated?
It is part of their CIP project, so it's proceeding as a CIP project.
And then what's the timeline on the construction?
It's in the EIR, is out for review right now, or I think it's gone through review, and they're working with that.
Okay.
Commissioner, and it only goes to San Vicente Road right now under current.
Correct. The EIR, the project is only extending the part of Ramona Street. It's an extension. So it's Ramona Street to San Vicente is the only part of the project that's
that's the only part that's really feasable. The rest of it is very expensive. Very expensive to actually bypass Ramona.
Okay, Commissioner Norby.
just two quick questions. So, is it the intent to alleviate traffic on the main street in Ramona? Is that the intent of it, or is there other reasons to do that road?
It alleviates traffic both on the main street and also on San Vicente Road, because it does it reduces traffic having to travel down Main Street or other roads down San Vicente.
Okay, and increase.
Pardon?
Isn't that like 12% decrease on 67?
I think so, yes.
And it's a four-lane road right now, Main Street?
Main Street is a four-lane road through most of Main Street, but I think there is a two-lane part also.
And the ADTs on that road?
They're pretty much right at capacity or close to capacity of the road.
Okay, appreciate that. Thank you.
And can staff point out the dairy farm that was referenced by the one speaker?
I'm assuming it's... this is the road as it ends now, of course, and it's going to connect here, so there's going to be some kind of a...
That's a dairy farm right there.
So, yeah.
That's the pig research facility.
No, that's over here. Pig research is right there.
No, it's not.
Isn't it over there by...
No, it's right off Dye Road, and there was so much public outcry when we put that in, when that was put in.
Okay.
No, it's off Warnock.
Okay, let's...
Warnock? Yeah, well, can Mr. I forget your name, but if you can...
After 41 years, I'm pretty sure I can tell you where it is.
You live there. You have a power laser pointer right there for you.
Oh, wow, I get a laser pointer, too.
Be careful.
Yeah,
these costs $10.
Right there. That's the pig research. That would be the pig farm.
Okay.
That's the eucalyptus paintball park. Now, from here, they want to run the expansion right like that, which basically goes right through the pig farm, right through the 100-yard floodplain. This is the Lunan's Dairy. This is the Van Toll Dairy.
Right.
And Dowell's is right here. So there's 1, 2, 3, a pig farm, a chicken ranch.
Is the chicken ranch still functioning?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And from what I understand, the 90 feet. So why in the world are you going to do two lanes, bike lanes, easements through a 100-year floodplain to get to here? And bottom line, from like about right here in Ramona, why would you want to go up 78, come around, and head back out of town? There's one stoplight. There would be 2 stoplights, 3 on Keys, 4 on Amigas, the 5th onto Highway 78, I'm sorry. So the only part of the community that would go from this would be half of Ramona, which enters out south on 67 anyways. The only persons it would help would be Julian.
Country Estates.
No, Country Estates is built up.
Got to come up here and go there. That's how.
But it already goes that way anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And they're only within 5% of being completely maxed out capacity-wise. So what's the whole purpose of that? But why attack this right here with this massive structure? You have 2 lanes that lead out to here. This is the problem right here. This is the Dye Road stoplight.
It should be a...
It should be 4 lanes, 2 turn lanes. And you could...
Or roundabout.
You can do that for a couple $1 million.
Hmm.
And they want to put $13 to $20 million to run this thing through. And then there's a bridge overpass that when they connect onto 67 here, the original plan is going to wipe through Joe's property, come here. Hmm. And there's actually going to have to be a over...
That's gone.
It's part of the plan.
Well, let's go in sequence. Thank you. Actually, maybe you can stay there because you obviously you know the lay of the land.
You still in the Rexall?
So do we know in this room, do we know whether the CEQA document addressed this issue of improvements at Dye Road and 67?
Sorry, Chairman Beck. We do not know the details of what's within the environmental document
sure.
for this project. I'm sure that we could invite DPW staff to attend and report on the status
okay,
of the project.
Maybe we can do that. Commissioner Norby, then Commissioner Woods.
I'm thinking along the same lines. I mean, if there's an EIR on the project, they're going to be researching alternative measures as just a prerequisite for the EIR, and then one of those would most assuredly be intersection improvements to see if you can get to where you want to get as an alternative measure to doing this road. So I look forward to seeing all that.
Yeah, my understanding is that bypass or at the Dye Road interchange of 67, that the alternative, which would have been a bridge overlay, is so expensive it's not even being considered.
Okay, so on that note.
And then the funding only goes to San Vicente, and I doubt that it'll ever go farther. And the question I think that you should frame around is the value
of going to San Vicente over what exists today? That to me is your question.
You're not gonna
improve the interchange at Dye Road and 67 dramatically. All you're going to do is straighten out that road through the floodplain. So the question is, does it really take traffic off 67 and more than what exists today?
What I've seen is you're still tied up at Dye Road. I mean, everybody gets tied up at Dye Road. So instead of going through this whole expansion right here, why don't you focus on getting people out of Ramona right there? It's because all you're going to do is speed them up, and they're going to sit right there.
They need a big roundabout there to keep the flow of traffic going.
I'm not an engineer. I'm just a humble construction guy, but come on.
Okay. We can't take an action on this because it's not an agenda item. Do we have more comments from the commission? Okay. Staff does, and let's hope that that the EIR for this looks at all these issues at a minimum that have been addressed by the locals here today. I'm assuming that's the case, but you're maybe not privy to it.
Well, and Chairman Beck, that's exactly on the lines of where we were going to go. What we will do is make sure that the planning commissioners obtain a copy of the environmental impact report for this project so that you can review that. Just with regards to the general plan update, the specific details of CIP projects such as this isn't something that's addressed as part of the broader document of the general plan update. I think you've heard a lot of times that the alignments that we show on the general plan are very general, and there's generally a lot of play with them. I think what people often say is that, you know, there's a quarter mile of play in either direction of the alignments that we show within our general plan, because they are, you know, supposed to be general. And I think that this is also a good example of the more detailed planning that has to come on each specific road as they're constructed, as they're planned and constructed for the general plan. And so, you know, to continue remembering that the general plan framework is very broad, and then it's within these detailed CIP projects that we actually get into the substance and the specifics of the actual alignment and the ADT and issues like that.
Okay. Thank you very much for coming down. We appreciate your input.
You know what? That's all we wanted to do is just get your guys' attention on it, because it's kind of silly. Nobody has a lot of money to spend on.
Okay. Thank you very much. I think we heard you, and it was good information. Anything else, staff, that we have to deal with?
You talking about the general plan or the whole meeting?
I'm talking about today.
I think if we're done with discussion on the general plan update, we're done with the issues on the meeting agenda.
Okay. Then what did you just say, Brian? You cannot go?
On the 23rd, I am not available to go to the board, and I understand you guys voted me on to do that when I was not here. And I know that that's what happens when you leave early.
What a bad commissioner.
So that's Marion Mountain.
So, you know, whoever.
As I recall, when you voted, there was a designation of a primary and an alternate.
Okay.
And since you can't make it, it would default to Commissioner Pallinger. And as long as he can attend, I think we're covered.
Good.
We did that because we knew you were chicken out.
Okay. Okay, we're adjourned.
Chicken out? I was chairing at the time.
Chicken out? I was specific.